Happy NBA Draft Day, everybody. That is the big event going down tonight, the 2020 NBA Draft. A lot of questions, a lot of anticipation around the draft tonight just because there isn't a clear number one. The top two teams right now with the top two picks, Minnesota and Golden State, could very well be looking to shop those picks around. So just kind of the unpredictability, really, the unknown going into this NBA draft. Again, even talking about the number one overall pick being such an unknown, really gives this kind of a different feel. So excited to watch that unfold tonight. We'll talk about that here momentarily, but we got a fun show. We'll be hitting pretty much everything. We'll talk NBA draft. We'll look at some NFL headlines, some Major League Baseball news, some Major League Soccer news, all that good stuff coming up in the show in this hour. So looking forward to that. And let's start again talking about the NBA draft. Because again, a lot of questions, a lot of uncertainty about if Minnesota will keep that number one pick. If they do, who are they going to go with? Because essentially, Anthony Edwards, the guard out of Georgia, James Wiseman, the center out of Memphis, and LaMelo Ball, of course, guard, younger brother of Lonzo Ball, has been playing over in Europe. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if Minnesota, if they do hold on to this, where do they go with it? Same with the Golden State Warriors. I mean, to think that the Warriors could trade that second pick, to me, the whole time I've heard conversation around this NBA draft, I've never understood that. Like, I mean, if Minnesota can get something for that number one pick, I mean, great, go for it if you feel like that's the best option. But if I'm looking at this from Golden State's perspective, I mean, you have Steph Curry coming back. You have Klay Thompson coming back. You're going to have both of those guys in your backcourt this year. Wouldn't you want that second-round pick to hold on to that, to know that you can get someone like a James Wiseman? Because I think that inside presence would be, you know, to get a young player that could be a center or a power forward, that would be the best move for Golden State, knowing that you're already going to have two star guards coming back to your team this year. And, I mean, even with Curry and Thompson coming back, that immediately makes Golden State contenders in the West. So you think about those two veteran guards with kind of a younger, explosive center or big man down low, and I think that could round off Golden State right there as they get ready to make another charge through the Western Conference. So to see James Wiseman's name there for Golden State, and again, this is just off of some mock drafts, but essentially James Wiseman expected or thought to go to Golden State with the number two pick tonight. And to me, that seems like the best option for Golden State, unless you can get an experienced big man off some kind of a trade. Otherwise, I feel like going young with a big man is the best way for Golden State to go. So I think having that number two pick, having James Wiseman kind of right there for Golden State, because I don't think they need a guard. That's the thing with Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. I mean, they're both guards, and I just don't think that's really what Golden State needs right now. I mean, coming off the bench, sure. Anybody I think would be happy to back up Curry and Thompson, that 1-2 punch that Golden State has, but I just don't think it would be the most sensible decision for Golden State to do that when you can have someone like James Wiseman right there as you step up for that number two pick. And just going back to Minnesota for a second here, right now Anthony Edwards of Georgia is projected to go number one to the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, you think about Minnesota with Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and then you think about them having Anthony Edwards on that team as well. That could be a nice, you know, three-person lineup there, a three-person mixture there for Minnesota as they try to get competitive again in the Western Conference. It's been a fairly long time since Minnesota's had any kind of competitive chance there in the West. So if they add Anthony Edwards, they have that. You know, you get, you know, the Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns relationship off to a good start and have two very athletic and very skilled players, and then you add in D'Angelo Russell to that, who's shown that he can contribute to a team and be a very important and impactful player. I mean, there's some rumors going around that Minnesota may trade that number one pick, but to me, again, when you have someone like Anthony Edwards, even LaMelo Ball, I mean, there have been a lot of conversation about him possibly being the number one pick. So I think about, again, LaMelo Ball with a D'Angelo Russell or Karl-Anthony Towns, again, would be a solid pick for Minnesota and a solid direction for them to go. So, again, they might trade that pick, and if there's an experienced player out there or something that looks better to them than a young star going number one overall, then, I mean, that's their prerogative. But I feel like when you have someone like Anthony Edwards, really anybody, because right now Anthony Edwards is projected to go number one, but it could be Wiseman, it could be LaMelo Ball. That's the thing. That's what's so interesting about this NBA draft is there really isn't a clear number one. Coming off the NBA draft last year, when you had a Zion Williamson right there ready to go for who was, you know, it turned out to be the New Orleans Pelicans off of the NBA draft lottery. But still, when you go from a draft that has such a clear-cut number one, really, nobody coming out of college is going to have that type of presence in the NBA draft like Zion did last year. It just wouldn't have been plausible to think that you're going to get somebody at that level again, you know, sparking interest at the number one overall pick. But it's also, again, kind of a nice 180. There was really no question last year about who was going to go number one overall. So now you go to the complete opposite direction where really no one has an idea who's going to go number one overall. And that really kind of gives it a different feel into a year where, you know, we've had some unpleasant surprises. This is kind of a pleasant one. It's kind of a pleasant surprise to watch a draft and not really know who's going to be the number one pick. Even though Anthony Edwards is starting to show up on a lot of you know, number one, or a lot of mock drafts at number one, still, nothing is set in stone, and there's still not this feeling, at least I haven't gotten this feeling from, you know, draft analysts and experts that are saying, you know, it's a wide open field. I haven't gotten any kind of feeling that in the last, you know, day and a half or so that anybody is rising towards that absolute number one pick. So even though Anthony Edwards is listed right now as number one in a lot of these mock drafts, a lot of people that are a lot closer to these teams are talking to these teams day in and day out still are saying that it's up for grabs, it's up in the air at who's going to go number one. So that'll be interesting to see. Right now, again, mock drafts, a lot have Anthony Edwards going number one to Minnesota, James Wiseman going number two to Golden State, then LaMelo Ball going number three to the Charlotte Hornets. I mean, I think regardless of what order they go in, I'd be a little surprised if those weren't the first three off the board. I mean, they fall to four or five, I get it, but I would be surprised if those three, regardless of what order they go in, if those weren't the top three picked in the NBA draft. But you know what? Watch someone else be chosen there somewhere between one through three. But it'll be interesting. And then after that, after those first three picks, essentially, when Wiseman, Edwards, and Ball get taken off the board, then the kind of a real show begins, I feel like, because we start to see these different teams. I mean, I feel like there's, again, a nice pool of international talent that's coming into this NBA draft. So really looking forward to that. Somebody that also gaining a lot of attention just from his play on the court and really kind of the way he rose to that star player status in college. I'm excited to see where Obi Toppin goes. The forward out of Dayton, he was somebody that he was having an incredible season this past year in college basketball before the season got shut down. And he was one of those guys for Dayton that you really look forward to watching during the March Madness tournament because he just exploded into stardom that year, last season. So to see him kind of build on that throughout the year, I feel like those guys always seem to show up and put on some exciting performances in March Madness. So not getting to see that performance, I'm even more intrigued by. I mean, right now he's projected to go number five to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, you know, that could be a great piece to a puzzle of Cleveland starting to rebuild that team into some kind of contender there out east. But I'm interested to see where he goes and the impact he makes just because of how quickly he became kind of a well-known name last year in the NCAA. And just, you know, again, you think about Cleveland with some of the other young guys or some of the guys that they've drafted in recent years like Colin Sexton or Darius Garland or Kevin Porter Jr. And you think about those guys and just the fact that if Cleveland can get some nice, you know, youth movement going and have some veterans around them, they could possibly set themselves up for a nice season. I don't think Cleveland obviously is going to be any kind of contender in the East. But still, I think Obi Toppin would be a really nice addition to the Cleveland Cavaliers if that's who they decide to go with. And then the Phoenix Suns. You know, now conducting that trade, getting Chris Paul to come to Phoenix, be there with Devin Booker. They only have one pick as of right now in the draft tonight. That's the number 10 overall pick, and I haven't heard about them doing any other, conducting any trades or looking into any trades to get any more picks. So that'd be the only pick that they have in this draft, and right now, majority of the mock drafts have them going with Sadiq Bey out of Villanova, and what I like about that is it's a forward. He's listed as a forward. Now, you would think that they'd be going for some backcourt depth because they lost Rubio and Kelly Oubre Jr. and Ty Jerome with that Chris Paul deal. But I feel like that backcourt, again, you're going to have Paul and Booker. That's going to be your two backcourt stars. You have DeAndre Ayton at your center. So drafting a talented forward that could be, that could play, I think, a little shooting guard if you need him to, a little bit number two. But to have him at three and four, he's got great size, great length, great passing ability. So I feel like filling in that kind of forward role would be really nice for Phoenix. And again, having that complement of Chris Paul and Devin Booker in the backcourt and then DeAndre Ayton at center, if you have a young, explosive forward like Sadiq Bey, that could give Phoenix just a nice, youthful option there at the forward position to just try to make up for some of that talent that they lost. Because again, I mean, Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre Jr., Ty Jerome, they were all decent players. Kelly Oubre Jr., I really enjoyed his play towards the end of the season, but it's not that they lost a Devin Booker or anything like that. They lost some talented guys, but they didn't lose like a star player or a super impact player or anything like that. They didn't lose a Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton or anybody of that level. So I think keeping them, bringing in someone like Chris Paul, then drafting a young forward like Sadiq Bey could be a great move for Phoenix, and it could just try to build on how they ended last year in the bubble. Because I mean, it was arguably, in terms of the finishing up of the regular season there, the seeding games, Phoenix is one of the more impressive teams during that portion of the restart. Of course, they missed out on the playoffs, missed out on the 8-9 play-in game, but still, just the fact that they had put themselves on the cusp of being in that position says a lot about where that team was at the end of the year, mostly because, obviously, I think Devin Booker was a huge part of that. But you have those two kind of core pieces, I feel like, for Phoenix. Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, if they can keep them in Phoenix, they can keep them, with some talent around them, like a Chris Paul, like a young guy like Sadiq Bey or whoever, then you can continue to just build on that end of the season that Phoenix had last year. So I think this is going to be a solid move for them if they go that way. Honestly, I'd like to see them. I don't think they need to draft a center. A forward, if you're not going to go a forward, go with a guard. Because, it wouldn't hurt to maybe get a little more of talent there in the backfield behind, or in the backcourt behind Devin Booker and Chris Paul. But you know what? We'll see where Phoenix goes. I hope, with that being their only pick at number 10, there's still going to be a solid talent pool available to them. So hopefully they can take advantage of that and draft somebody that'll continue to bolster that. A youthful team, not as young as some teams in the NBA, but there's some good youth. They've had some good youth on that team. I think if they get another young piece, Phoenix could be, again, a tough team out west. They're not going to be any kind of Western Conference contender in terms of a championship in the conference or going to the NBA Finals, but I think if they draft right tonight with that one pick, they could be at least a serious playoff contender coming up this season in the Western Conference. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see where this draft goes. I'm excited to see who gets taken number one overall, if there's any kind of crazy trades or just, like I said, there's just so much uncertainty going into this draft that, when you don't really know what to expect, it makes it all the more fun, especially when it comes to a sporting event. So looking forward to watching how this NBA draft unfolds tonight on ESPN. I believe it starts at 5 o'clock. There's some preview shows at 4:30, but I believe the first round begins at 5 o'clock on ESPN. So tune in. Should be a lot for me. It's a Wednesday. How else would you like to spend a Wednesday besides watching the next wave of future stars coming into the NBA? Should be a lot of fun, and can't wait to see how that unfolds and unravels tonight. But we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some NFL headlines. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. The NFL continues to try to operate in this COVID-dominated world that we live in. And The NFL has sent a memo out to all NFL teams letting them know that they are going to operate under new intensive COVID-19 protocols. Which, understandable that they want to go a little more intensive with some of the issues that the NFL has now had this year with the breakout in the Tennessee Titans facility and team, a few obviously other kind of minor incidents, or not minor incidents, but other just not full-on breakouts, but other, you know, positive results coming up throughout the NFL. In fact, the Raiders, once again, first it was the offensive line. Now this time there was a report about maybe in hour, 45 minutes or so ago, or to an hour ago, that came out that said pretty much the entire Raiders defensive line was testing positive or were on the COVID-19 reserve list due to close contact with someone that tested positive. They all could be eligible to play Sunday if they continue to test negative. So we'll keep an eye on that story for you guys. But yeah, I mean, not a surprise that the NFL is going to go to a little more intensive COVID-19 protocols. My only question is, why is there an even more intensive level to go to? Shouldn't you already have been operating under your strictest intensive, like, you know, protocols that you could have put in? This is what blows my mind. It constantly blows my mind about the NFL or just sports leagues sometimes in general. But really, the NFL in this case. Because you had since March to think about this. And I understand wanting to have, you know, give your team some kind of leeway. But the fact that when you were drawing this plan up, you left such a gap that you can now do this. You can move to even more intensive protocols to try to get teams to stay healthy or follow rules and all this different stuff. And honestly, I feel like they should have been doing that from the get-go. You should have been operating under code red type of a mindset from the get-go. It seems like now they're going into that mindset. Why do you need to see breakouts and positive tests and all these different things happening around the league before someone goes, oh, hey, you know what? Maybe we want to be a little more strict about these things. When you know about this kind of problem since March, and you know that you're going to have to deal with it in some way by the time your season shows up, I feel like these are the rules you should have been operating under since week one. But no, we get through 10 weeks. We've had a whole team breakout that's happened, numerous positive tests around the league, and now the NFL decides, oh, hey, you know what? Maybe we should go a little bit more strict. Sometimes, I mean, it just blows my mind. Because I get it. It's not easy. You want to have these teams and players have some flexibility, you know, give them some kind of way to operate in their you know, within their own world still that they know that they're comfortable with. But you also, there's, and you know, it's also a very different world this year that we've been used to living in. But I feel like with the way that the NFL approached this season, they should have been on a better safe than sorry, more strict guidelines the entire time, instead of waiting till now to enforce those things. But starting this Saturday, all NFL teams are going to have to operate under the league's intensive COVID-19 protocols for the remainder of the season. And some of those details of the intensive protocols are as follows. So there is a requirement that all meetings be held virtually or in the largest possible indoor space, provided such space has been inspected and approved by the NFL and the NFLPA. And again, you obviously in-person meetings, you can get, I feel like, a lot more out of that just from having that closer contact, seeing the body language, just being able to. I mean, there's just something about being face-to-face and having an in-person meeting that, you know, I feel like is a little more productive. But again, know the world you're operating in, and why wouldn't you just do it on Zoom to begin with? I feel like obviously a lot of teams have been doing that, but the fact that it's got to be spelled out now, It's obviously become more of a problem than the NFL expected, or that they thought it was, you know, it had been since week one. But that's not what it is. You have to hold a meeting virtually or do it in the largest indoor space that's been approved by the NFL and the NFLPA. So it seems like you can make it a whole lot easier on yourself if you just do it virtually. Grab-and-go meal service in the cafeteria. That one seems pretty self-explanatory. Limited time spent in the locker rooms. This is an interesting one. Less than 15 minutes per person per session, with the sessions scheduled so as to minimize the number of people in the locker room at one time. Again, have they not been tracking limiting people in the locker room at one time already? When you know how big an NFL team is, you know how big a roster is, did no one think, hey, we might want to space out the amount of people and the amount of time they're in locker room? In 15 minutes, I feel like that's going to take them that long just to get all their pads and their uniform and stuff on. Have you ever seen someone try to take an NFL jersey off or put one on? It's like watching someone try to put up a tent by themselves. There's like a piece kind of flailing off to the side. One piece they put over their shoulder pads, kind of popping up over it now. So it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of time in the locker room. So I mean, give them a little bit more time. And yeah, you should have been spacing them out already. I mean, if you were letting the whole team, I mean, if it's game day, I can understand that obviously it's not about, you know, you have everyone in there essentially all at the same time to get ready for the game, to get ready to go out on the field. So game day, I can understand that could be a little bit more of a tricky situation. But for practice, that should have been done already. Masks or league-approved Oakley helmet face shields at all times in every part of the facility, including on the practice field. Again, was that not already being done? Are people walking around the team facility without a mask on? I know that's been talked about from the start. So again, just the fact that that has to be laid out again. I mean, are people forgetting that? I mean, just unbelievable. And then, you know, the weight room also, a limit to 10 players and 5 coaches at any one time in the weight room. Again, understandable there. Keep spacing. Keep everyone healthy. But again, I just feel like most of these things should have already been put into place. So either it wasn't, or people have been ignoring it to the point where they have to restate it again in this intensive protocol gear up that the NFL is now doing. But just, it frustrates me because this is not something new. This is something that we have been dealing with in the U.S. since March, or the sports world has been dealing with since March. So the fact that the NFL, I don't know, just frustrated. I'm frustrated because every time it feels like the NFL arrives to some conclusion or some decision on what they're going to do with any topic, could be any topic, and I feel like they always make it tougher on themselves and they have to. They either go back on what they decide, or they just try to go and enforce what they decided down your throat, and it always goes bad. And this again, most of these things should have already been put into place. So if they weren't, or people were just forgetting about it, that just drives me crazy. But yes, those intensive COVID-19 protocols start this Saturday as the NFL tries to essentially get the last 7 weeks of their season in the books. So we'll see if it makes a big difference. But then in some other injury news, Christian McCaffrey, as quickly as he returned to the field, he is leaving the field again as he is unlikely to play this Sunday for the Carolina Panthers. And Teddy Bridgewater's status also remains kind of a question mark. So Carolina, after having not an awful year, again, I mean, a new quarterback, a brand new head coach, no real offseason or preseason to get acquainted with each other there on the field, I feel like they've been holding their own. They've had some good games both on the road and at home. They've been able to put up a little bit of a fight in the division this year when you got two teams like New Orleans and Tampa Bay with the teams they fielded. I feel like they've been doing a pretty good job, and Matt Rhule seems to be really settling into his role with the Carolina Panthers as head coach. You know, he's had some coaching experience before at the NFL level, but definitely seems to be really settling in, really getting comfortable with this Carolina Panthers team. But now it'll be interesting to see. I mean, they've been able to survive without Christian McCaffrey this season at times. But what's really going to be interesting is now not having Teddy Bridgewater out there. Obviously, that's going to hamper the Carolina Panthers a little bit. The only good thing is they are playing Detroit, and Detroit's dealing with their own questions about their quarterback and Matthew Stafford, who's taking his thumb injury day to day. Could be ready to play on Sunday. Could not be. So, I mean, a lot of question marks around some important players to that Carolina-Detroit game. Not that either of the teams are really threatening the top of their division, obviously, but still just going to be interesting to see how both those teams battle through those injuries this weekend. Because also for Carolina, Russell Okung, the left tackle with a calf injury, and cornerback with a toe are expected to be lines as well. So Carolina could be kind of limping into this game against Detroit. And then the question would be, if Matthew Stafford is starting, you know, I think advantage goes to the Lions. If he's not starting, Panthers still could find a way to pull off that win, as could the Lions. So I think there's some interesting question marks around that game, specifically for the injuries and how it plays out. Just wish that they were both, you know, one of those teams doing a little bit better in their division, so that would be a little more interesting. But, you know, just with the way that Carolina had been operating this year with Matt Rhule and Teddy Bridgewater, it'd be a bummer for them to kind of lose some of that momentum if Bridgewater wasn't out there. But again, just have to wait and see what the injury report is as we get closer to game time. And then again, another injury in the NFL, one that has been in the headlines quite a bit this week ever since the injury happened on Sunday, is Drew Brees dealing with those cracked ribs. Dealing now with a punctured lung. It was a collapsed lung. Now it's a punctured lung. And with all that, now the Saints turn to Jameis Winston. And we're going to find out if, you know, New Orleans survived last year without Brees for a time being with Bridgewater and Taysom Hill kind of splitting QB duties. And Winston looked all right in the game this past Sunday when filling in for once Brees left the game. He came in, looked pretty good. Again, not otherworldly, you know. I mean, he avoided any kind of pick six like he had in Tampa Bay. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, this is Jameis Winston's chance to, again, kind of like Teddy Bridgewater, step up and show that you can still lead a team. After these struggles, after, you know, having to deal with the issues you've dealt with throughout your career in terms of turnovers or off-the-field stuff or whatever it is, this is a chance to show that you can still lead a team, and a team that is currently fighting for the champ for their division, leading their division. And how long is Drew Brees going to be out for? Is he out for, I mean, one report said it could be 3 weeks. One report said it could be the end of the season. I mean, it all depends on kind of where Drew Brees stands as well, because if he's out for the rest of the season, let's say, and Tampa Bay, they're down on the tiebreak to New Orleans, but if the Saints just start falling apart with Winston at quarterback, then the Buccaneers just swoop in and take that division. And that could be huge for playoff implications as well if New Orleans then goes to a wild card and has to go on the road. But I do think that if there is a head coach, I mean, what Sean Payton has showed he can do last year with Bridgewater and Taysom Hill, I don't feel like the Saints are in as bad of a position as they could be in with Jameis Winston back there. Because I feel like Sean Payton, one of those coaches that is just a great at creating a game plan that'll suit his quarterback and the weapons that he has around him. So looking forward to kind of the Saints game this weekend. I think that's going to be it's going to be an interesting look into how the Saints are going to operate. Are they going to go with what they did last year, switching Winston and Hill and operate on that kind of two quarterback system? Are they going to give Jameis Winston more of an opportunity to be the starting quarterback, the lone quarterback out there for the New Orleans Saints? I think a lot of interesting questions there. And as we get to the as we approach the home stretch of the season. Injuries, COVID-19 reserve list. I mean, there's a lot to watch out for as teams just continue to deal with the roller coasters of this season. So with week 11 starting tomorrow with a major matchup, obviously in Seattle and Arizona, which we'll talk about tomorrow, it's going to be interesting to see how teams navigate this tricky, tricky landscape this year as we come down the home stretch. But those are some NFL headlines. We're going to take a break when we come back. Some baseball news, a mastermind stepping down, and possibly a new mastermind getting her first shot in Major League Baseball. So we'll talk about that coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Man, some clouds have rolled in because in that commercial break, it went from being nice and light in this studio. It is almost now pitch black in here, except for the few computer screens that are on. And also, yesterday was a hectic day around the area with multiple wildfires that were going on. So just wanted to give a quick shout out to all the firefighters yesterday, all the first responders yesterday that were flying around the city of Reno and Sparks and putting out and fighting multiple wildfires around the area. So thank you all very much for your efforts all throughout yesterday afternoon, all throughout the evening as well, continuing into today. Thank you very, very much for everything that all the effort and all the hard work you guys put in. Last night, really, this whole year, I mean, the summer with some of the wildfires that popped up around the area as well, not just here in Nevada, obviously, but California, all over the place. So big, big thank you to all the men and women and the firefighters out there and the first responders who have been working hard this year. So really appreciate you guys. And now we get into some baseball headlines because pretty big news about a man stepping down and a woman finally getting an opportunity that she has been more than ready for a couple decades now. But let's start with the man stepping down. Theo Epstein is stepping away from his position with the Chicago Cubs. So the man that has been responsible for ending two of the most well-known title droughts in Major League Baseball. He was there with the Red Sox in 2004. Of course, he was there with the Cubs in 2016. So he has really just become kind of a baseball wizard of sorts in terms of just being able to build these franchises and build these teams to championship level. Now, the Red Sox wasn't as tough of a rebuild as it was there in Chicago, but still, for him to be there, for him to be the man, you know, the president of baseball operations there is just really, really incredible to think that. I mean, anybody in that position would be happy with either one of those. They were to have ended the Red Sox title drought in 2004, the Cubs title drought in 2016. The fact that he was there for both of them is pretty incredible. And now the questions arise about what he's going to do and what are the Cubs going to do. This is leading to a lot for, you know, Epstein stepping down leads a lot of people to believe that there's going to be a lot of turnover now for the Chicago Cubs roster. I mean, they have, you know, kind of sent out some signals to other teams that they are willing to alter kind of the core position players that were there for that World Series in 2016. I mean, Yu Darvish, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant. I mean, essentially anybody, maybe not Rizzo, but essentially anybody could be gone there out of Chicago. Chris Bryant actually is a name that's come up a lot just based on what he's, you know, set to get paid. So there could be a lot of changing there for the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, the kind of feeling going into this past season for the Cubs was that this was kind of the last hurrah of that unit, of those young guys that came in, managed to end the title drought there in 2016. A lot of people thought that this year was kind of the swan song for that group. Now that Epstein has stepped away, it seems as though that is the case. So it's going to be interesting to see how much turnover there really is with the Chicago Cubs, but the feeling around Chicago is that now that Epstein has stepped down, there is going to be a lot of moving parts for Chicago in this offseason. And then in terms of who they could be most likely to trade, again, Chris Bryant's name has come up a lot, and it seems as though that's kind of the main target in terms of players that Chicago, the Chicago Cubs want to trade away. But this This is going to be, again, just kind of really interesting. Wilson Contreras could be somebody that they bring back if they want to try to trade Chris Bryant for somebody. And, I mean, this is just going to be an interesting time now for the Cubs to see how they try to rebuild this team, because we've seen that you can have success with youth. That's what they were able to do in 2016. So are they setting themselves up for that again? And now that Jed Hoyer has taken over that spot or that position for the Chicago Cubs, it'll be interesting to see now how he puts his twist on this team moving forward. And then what will Theo Epstein do? He mentioned that he's looking for a third chapter in baseball. And honestly, I feel like he could go for almost any position in baseball anywhere. I mean, when you have the resume that he does, It's kind of just like take your pick. You know, he's talked about maybe being a part of some kind of ownership group of a team instead of just, you know, being president of baseball operations, actually be involved in the ownership of a team. And something interesting that I saw, mainly on ESPN, I saw it a few other places as well, but if he's going to stay in Chicago, Theo Epstein, what about the White Sox? Could be an interesting move. I mean, you think about where, I mean, Boston wasn't struggling as much as the Cubs were when Theo Epstein got there, but you think about a team that hasn't had a whole lot going for him in the last 5-10 seasons. They've shown some good spurts here and there. That could be an interesting opportunity for Theo Epstein there to stay in Chicago and possibly work with another team in that area and you know, turn around a third franchise in his career, which would be a heck of a way to go out. But it'll just be interesting to see where he goes, what he decides to do. Does he get into ownership? Does he look for another kind of president of baseball operation type of position somewhere? And where will he go? Is he going to look for another kind of rebuild team? Does he really want to get involved in that again at this point in his career? Or is he going to look for a team that's maybe a little more well-established that isn't so much a rebuild, maybe just kind of a team looking for a tune-up? You know, come in and you know, put those last few pieces of the puzzle together to help a team become a true contender. You know, so does he stay in that position? Does he go for kind of an ownership, more of an ownership position and look to kind of build a team a little more to his liking that way? I mean, the door is wide open for Theo Epstein, as it should be based on what he's accomplished. So, I don't see him going anywhere outside of baseball. I mean, it's possible, but all the reports that I've seen, I mean, he's obviously he loves this game. He knows this game very well, so it seems as though he's going to try to find some way to stay with Major League Baseball. And again, I feel like he could take his pick on wherever he would want to go or want to do, and he would have that opportunity. But big news there with Theo Epstein stepping down from the Chicago Cubs. And then a couple days ago, it was reported that Kim Ng is going to become the first female general manager in Major League Baseball. And, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I don't really know a whole lot about certain GM candidates throughout sports to begin with. So anytime I hear of a hiring, I kind of like to look into who it is. And this woman has been overdue for an opportunity like this in Major League Baseball. Because she has, I mean, decades and decades of experience in this industry, in this sport, and she just seems like when you're looking for someone to break down a barrier, when looking for that first person, right, to be the first female GM in baseball history, you want that candidate to be kind of a no-doubter. Someone can look at their resume, they can look at their body of work and say, oh yeah, absolutely, you know, made a great decision going with this person. I feel like Miami has done just that. You can look at her resume and know that this woman understands baseball, she understands the business, she loves this sport, and that she's going to do some great things for the Miami Marlins. To think about her and Derek Jeter, they're kind of working together. It seems like an awesome partnership. She has a lot of experience with Derek Jeter as well, a lot of time knowing him and working with him. So it's awesome to see those opportunities being handed, you know, not handed, but awarded to these women that have more than enough experience and more than a impressive resume to get these opportunities. So I think Miami did a great job. They made a great hire, and really interested to see what she does. You know, what's her spin on this baseball team going to look like? What players is she going to bring in? How is she going to kind of build this team out? And now it's just, you know, kind of the fun part of it. The big announcement was made. Now it's going to be fun to see again how she puts her own spin on this baseball team. And for Miami, a team that went from being the bottom of the barrel in 2019 to making the playoffs this year in 2020, they're trending in the right direction. So you bring someone like Kim Ang in that has the mind for baseball that she does and the love for the sport that she does, and Miami could be, I mean, they could have made the biggest offseason acquisition so far. And it'll be interesting to see how this develops in the offseason and how she starts to put her spin on this Miami Marlins team. And can't wait to see that. So congratulations to Kim Ang. Hats off to the Miami Marlins for making that hire and starting to show that, you know, women can operate in these roles just like men can. And to see someone with that resume get that position, I mean, again, she's more than earned it. And it's long overdue for her to be in this kind of position in the world of Major League Baseball. So looking forward to see what she can do with the Miami Marlins, and looking forward to seeing what the Cubs now do under their new management, new leader, and where Theo Epstein goes. So not all questions surrounding players this offseason. Also some front office people getting into the headlines there. But hats off to the Miami Marlins. That's an awesome hire for them. And as we come back, when we come back from the break, not as we come back, when we come back from the break, an MLB legend has joined a Major League Soccer ownership group. So we'll talk about that. MLS warning teams that, hey, you could have to forfeit playoff games should there be a breakout of COVID on your team. So we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Major League Soccer just a couple days away from getting their playoffs underway. November 20th is the start of the Major League Soccer playoffs. And the Seattle Sounders announced yesterday that a former athlete to the Seattle area and arguably one of the more popular athletes to play in the Seattle area, that being Major League Baseball Hall of Famer, and, of course, Seattle Mariners legend Ken Griffey Jr. and his family have been added to the Major League Soccer Club's ownership group. So Ken Griffey Jr., now part of the Seattle Sounder FC ownership group. What's cool about that is, you know, Seattle being one of those kind of staple MLS teams, especially being up there in the Pacific Northwest and having the success that they've had, recently, and just throughout the history of Major League Soccer. But for them to have that kind of presence, because Major League Soccer continues to grow in this country, and they have more expansion teams in line for the coming seasons. And it's getting more and more popular. There's more and more people showing up to these games, supporting them. I mean, Atlanta United was playing in the Atlanta Falcons Stadium and selling it out. That's how passionate people are becoming about that sport in the United States. And it's awesome to see, because it is a really fun sport to watch once you kind of understand it. I mean, I've always thought that if you enjoy basketball, you'll enjoy soccer. Because essentially, it's kind of the same sport, just with about double the amount of people on the field. And it's a field, not a court. But it's double the amount of people out there playing. And instead of doing it with your hands, it's with your feet. But essentially, ball movement, trying to attack, trying to set up those aggressive lines to get the best and high percentage shot on goal. There's a lot of similarities, I feel like, between basketball and soccer. So it's not overly surprising that the popularity is catching up, but when you have people like Ken Griffey Jr. that then starts to invest his time and his money and you know, being there for this team in that area, especially, that is so passionate around their sports, just cool to see that. Cool to see someone like Ken Griffey Jr. getting involved with Major League Soccer, and especially with a team like the Seattle Sounders, who have really made, I mean, when you have Seattle and Portland and Vancouver all right up there in the Pacific Northwest, you have a great little rivalry triangle that's going on up there. And now to have Ken Griffey Jr. kind of involved in that in some way, pretty cool for Major League Soccer. And another announcement that Major League Soccer made: with the playoffs coming up here in a few days, they've told teams that essentially if you have a COVID outbreak, you may have to forfeit a playoff game. That sounds like a pretty good motive to me to be as careful and as smart about these things as I can. And really, I feel like, again, that's what the NFL could have done. At the start, instead of trying to say that, oh, you know, we'll reschedule games, we'll move the schedule around, we'll do this, we'll do that, tell a team that if you have a COVID breakout, if you can't play on the day that you've been scheduled to play, you forfeit that game. You lose, the other team wins, and that's it. I feel like some teams would have been maybe a little bit more careful, a little bit more mindful about how they were on the sideline or at the practice facility or away from the team facility. But I think Major League Soccer letting teams know, hey, if you're reckless enough during the playoffs to you know, have an outbreak, you're most likely going to have to forfeit a playoff game. And that'll sting. That'll really sting. But it gets the message across, doesn't it? That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tomorrow we'll talk Thursday Night Football with the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals in a massive NFC West matchup. And, of course, plenty more as well. So talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Peace.